I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music by composer Katie Greiser right now. She wrote it for the fun and unusual holiday production of Frogs that Imago Theater has done off and on through the holidays for many years now. That show runs through January 5th at Imago Theater. You can find out more about that at imagotheater.com. Every holiday season, theaters make the difficult task of deciding if they'll be producing a play that's holiday-related during the month of December. Now, finding contemporary holiday shows can be challenging, especially finding something that appeals to a non-denominational audience. Today, we focus on two plays that are wildly different from each other. Pretty different, maybe not wildly, but maybe. We'll find out. Artist Repertory Theater's Xmas Unplugged, directed by Luann Moldovan and Rusty Tennant, and Triangle Productions' American Fiesta, directed by Donald Horn, the artistic director of Triangle Productions. And we'll hear about these shows and what it takes to produce them during the holidays, plus ticket giveaways, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio are directors Luann Moldovan.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Rusty Tennant.
Hey there.
Hey there. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks.
Artist Repertory Theaters. Now, do you call it Xmas Unplugged or Christmas Unplugged?
Yeah, they're billing it as Xmas Unplugged.
Xmas Unplugged. And Don Horn, Artistic Director and Director of Triangle Productions, American Fiesta. Welcome back, Don.
Thank you.
Welcome all, the stage and studio.
Thanks.
Now, do you guys, just to start off with, do you remember your first holiday show that you ever saw or ever worked on? That gives you a lot of leeway there. I mean, for me, it's probably the first movie I saw, probably like It's a Wonderful Life mm-hmm. or Christmas Carol. But do you remember the first stage production?
I don't know if it was the first, but when I was in sixth grade, I was in the elementary choir, and we were rehearsing in the elementary gymnasium, which was a smaller gymnasium than the high school gymnasium we were to perform in the next day. And I had a solo or a duet with a friend of mine, Chris, and it was Santa Claus Comes to Town that we were singing, and we were singing in this gorgeous, beautiful, high, young boy soprano voice, and in front of the entire school in dress rehearsal, singing into this giant brick wall, which bounced right back at them, my voice changed. I had my Bobby Brady moment. I didn't fully understand it, and it traumatized me for years. I just thought I couldn't sing anymore. I thought it was done. I was done singing. So I don't know if that was my first moment, but it was definitely a memorable Christmas show that I did.
And quite a great memory to share with us, too. Any other memories you want to throw out? I don't know if you can top that one.
Well, I remember singing it. I was at Seaside High School for 3 years, and I remember going to what now is called the Covered Lloyd Center. But back then, years ago, it was uncovered, and we used to sing. All high schools used to go to Lloyd Center and sing in front of the ice skating rink.
Oh, that must have been fun.
It was fabulous. And now I go there and go,
what did they have
take
done?
Take the roof off.
Please. Yeah. More like Rockefeller Center there.
Yeah.
Well, anything to add to that, Luann?
Sadly.
Don't worry about it.
We'll get you there.
So what I'm here to talk about, what we are all here to talk about, is what makes theater artists want to work during the holidays? Is it masochism or what, you know? I mean, you know, it's a time usually that you spend with family and friends, but is it like having a party, you know, for you guys, but you're working?
Yeah, I think it's an extension. I mean, family is, well, in the theater, right? We're an extended, dysfunctional, neurotic family.
I'm glad you said that.
Amen.
But it's it's an opportunity to continue to play with our friends and comrades and be creative and all the better that it's the holiday season, because that can be really depressing sometimes.
I think also the audiences request it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They need
really
to go out
something
from their families and be someplace. Mm-hmm. And I think that changes the dynamics of what goes on stage, too.
So people actually ask you, what are you going to do anything during the holidays?
Oh, yeah.
The holidays?
Oh, a lot of times. I mean, we've done Judy's Scary Christmas and Christmas with the Crawfords and things like that. So we've done camp. To do something different like American Fiestas, you know, I still believe in the holidays, doesn't always have to be a holiday show.
Right, right. And that's what we're going to talk about, because you want to try to find contemporary work a lot of times, because I think the audience, I think there's always going to be an audience for the Nutcracker or It's a, you know, It's a Wonderful Life or Christmas Carol, you know, all the kind of standards, the classic standards. But I also think that they may have, parts of the audience may have had their fill of it too.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's like, what else can you bring to this table of holiday shows? I mean, it's a major challenge to find something that's fun and meaningful and that will appeal to a lot of people during the holidays, during the season. And beyond Dickens and adaptations of Christmas movies that I've mentioned, you know, the latest one is probably A Christmas Story that's done a lot, too. Mm-hmm. Both of the plays that we're going to talk about have received great reviews from Portland publications. Luann and Rusty, I'm going to start with you. You're directing some edgy material, and it's an evening of one acts at Artists Repertory Theater. And together they're called Xmas Unplugged. And Rusty, your play features a wrestling match with Santa with these young parents. How could they do that? How could they take down Santa like that? And Luann, your play involves a kidnapping of one of Santa's elves. Now already I'm told I can tell that there's going to be some really irreverent humor here. Mm-hmm. And it's almost Quentin Tarantino irreverent humor. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you want to, in either of you want to start about what made you want to do these plays during the season?
Because I'm a dark person and I enjoy dark humor. And I think both of these are at least grounded in a sense of darkness that I think a lot of people experience during the holiday season. I'd love to think that we all live It's a Wonderful Life during the holiday season. But I have to believe that's about 2% of us.
I don't even know if it's that many, right?
Right. And that's what these two plays, I think this is why they've landed, and I think this is why they seem to have hit a chord with people, because these two plays talk about all of us, the rest of us who are just struggling to get a present for our friend or our loved one or our child. And how difficult that is and what the struggles are and the lengths that we will go to get that present. And that's where, you know, I said yes to doing this play last year when Damaso was first getting into town, Damaso Rodriguez, the artistic director at Artist Rep, and when he was first getting into town. And I just loved the kind of tenor of it. But the further I got along in it, and especially opening weekend, which was Black Friday, in town and around the country.
Did audiences come for that?
Oh yeah, we had packed houses for previews and opening. It was great. But I started recognizing exactly how socially relevant this ridiculous, farcical, dark comedy that I had directed really is when I'm watching my YouTubes and my Facebook videos and it's just, you know, packed full of idiots beating the crap out of each other.
Oh man, like
for Christmas
like the
gifts,
thing.
And that is what these two people—they
kind of represent
show,
that.
Yeah, it's a metaphor. You know what happens with Santa Claus is an almost blatant metaphor for what we do or what we're doing every Christmas season at this stage of the game, and just, you know, sacrificing quote unquote the reason for the season.
Yeah, consumerism as addiction.
Exactly.
So Luann, Rusty's brought out some pretty deep themes for these edgy and irreverent comedies. What's your deep theme?
Well,
I mean, they kidnap an elf, and they want, what do they want from this elf?
Well, ultimately, they want.
Wow.
Happy ending. They want to believe in a fairy tale. It's a kind of the innocence of children evolves into what? Into an adult who has the same yearning. And so it's manifest in this kind of sweet, very and irreverent is really the catch-all phrase for the, or term for this, this tale of these three characters who end up sharing that, an alternative to a Yuletide experience.
Trying to find some meaning, some deeper meaning during this
Absolutely.
Time. Were they always together? Or are they all, these two plays always done together? No, so no. You brought these two plays together.
Damaso did. Yeah.
Okay.
This is a
that's
a Damaso
his brainchild.
Pairing. Yeah. He has he's had experience with Night Before Christmas in the mm-hmm. past himself, and then Matt Pelfrey is actually the resident playwright with Damaso's former theater company, Furious Theater Company, down in L.A. And so Matt and he obviously have worked together on a number of projects, and this is actually Matt's world premiere of this particular play. So no, these two plays have never been.
Oh,
done
wonderful! Yet.
And I think the other appeal is to do two plays in rep, so mm-hmm. the audience gets to enjoy two shows in one night, see two actors in two completely.
Yeah, there's
plays.
Two actors that are mm-hmm. in both the plays, right?
Well, and there's such a trend, on a much larger scale. There's such a trend in current theater right now to the hour and a half long show, not going much over that, mm-hmm. eliminating the, and this is a way to kind of capitalize on that idea and still give people a full evening of theater.
I kind of like that trend, and Don's mm-hmm. play, we'll talk also, mm-hmm. has that going for it too. Artist Repertory Theater presents Xmas Unplugged. It's an irreverent, edgy evening of two one-act plays, and the first is the world premiere of Matt Pelfrey's The Reason for the Season, directed by Rusty Tennant, with Steve Coker, Foss Curtis, Chris Murray, and the second play is Northwest premiere of Anthony Nielsen's The Night Before Christmas, directed by Luann Moldovan, with Steve Coker, Chris Murray, and Louisa Sermol, who I've had on before, and Jill Westerby. And performances run through December 29th, Wednesday through Sunday at 7:30, Sundays at 2. All those shows are at Artist Repertory Theater's Morrison Stage. That's located at 15th and Morrison. For more info, ART's number is 503-241-1278, 241-1278, or visit artistrep.org. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dume Roberts, talking with directors Luann Moldovan and Rusty Tennant of Artist Rep, and Don Horn, Artistic Director of Triangle Productions. Now, Don, American Fiesta isn't a traditional holiday show,
right.
But it really includes the heartwarming spirit and I would like to think the humor that can be associated with the holiday times. And the main character, Stephen, wants to marry his partner, Leon.
Mm-hmm.
And the play set in 2004 when that wasn't so commonplace. And it was before, I mean, it's still not really called marriage equality at that time in 2004.
Right.
And so the only place he can do that is in Canada, and the characters encounter some problems, of which I'm sure there are many, but some of them are from his family when he invites him to their wedding. And the centerpiece of the play is this amazing collection of American Fiesta wear.
Yeah.
And you want to tell us about those? Because you've got a great story about this.
Well, we've had this season ticket holder that's come to Triangle for 21 years, and her name is Joan Hayward. And in January, Joan and I had coffee, and she said, "I'm dying." And I said, "Hey, we all are." And she goes, "Well, Don, I want to let you know something. I'm dying within the next month or two."
Oh, my gosh.
And she goes, "I have wanted you to do this play for 7 years. You're going to get the Fiesta wear no matter what, so do the play."
Wow.
And I didn't realize there was 235 pieces. So the Saturday, we went over to Ellen By's house and read the play, and she was very alert. And she says, "Come over on Tuesday, pick up the Fiesta wear." I got there. They were all having lunch. She told me every piece, the 110 pieces she had in her collection at that point, there was another 100 and plus in Palm Springs that I didn't realize was coming up. And I packed it up. I hugged her. She died that night.
Oh, hon.
So,
I didn't realize it was
yeah.
those
wow.
particular string yeah. of events so
wow.
so close together.
And so Gary Cash, who read the script, Joan goes, "Please have him do the play." So it's been hard because I get to have her every day. I have her couch in the women's bathroom. I have her bookcases on stage.
And now you've got
and
her
I've got
collection.
Her Fiesta wear. And we've sold over 70 pieces of Fiesta wear. People walk in and go, "I want that piece there." A lady last Sunday bought $3,000 worth of Fiesta
wow.
wear. She just said, "I need to fill my collection up." I didn't realize that it was such a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a fundraiser for Triangle.
That's great.
Which is also great.
I just find this story so poignant
mm-hmm.
in of itself. I mean, why did she want this particular play done? Because of just the association with the Fiesta?
Well,
or did she really like this play?
She loved the play. It talks a lot about how the 2004 elections, the the Reds, as we call them, used gay marriage as a way to get the Reds in the White House and keep them in the White House. So there's a lot about that, and the father and the mother, how the father is very staunch. And he says, you know, Jesus says that we should love everybody. We don't need to get along with everybody. And I think that's, the play has a lot of humor, but also a lot of poignancy to it. And I love the play for that reason.
And what a memorial to her.
Yeah.
You know, every single night is a memorial to her.
And Dove Lewis, she gave money to Dove Lewis. She gave money to Third Rail. She gave money to Triangle. And that's why all three of them are helping produce the play. And with that, Dove Lewis has a night coming up this Thursday. And then the following week, Thursday, will be Third Rail. So they can honor Joan at the theater.
And say her name again.
Joan Hayward.
Joan Hayward.
Yeah.
So we can all remember her.
Yeah.
What a great honor.
It's amazing. I've been doing this for 24 years, and I've never received a large check ever. And the love that I got from her, and knowing that Triangle has something that we can live for, and also working with other organizations that normally wouldn't work together. It's an amazing time.
Well, and I think that this is so much more than a large check, isn't it?
Yeah,
very much. It's so personal.
I miss her. I miss her hug. You know, she always come up and she'd say, "Where's my hug?" And I'd hug her, and she goes, "No, that's not enough." And the day she died, she said the same thing.
Well, I just think that's a beautiful, beautiful story. And also, you know, it's a beautiful thing that you've done, you know, by doing this, connecting with your audience to that degree.
Yeah. People actually, some people come as collectors for Fiesta and walk away with something else. And other people that don't care about Fiesta get to be educated about Fiesta Ware, that during 2004, we had the terror alert levels and they kind of paralleled the color Fiesta Ware. And there's a lot of that in the show. And I want you to know one more thing. When I was going to see Joan on that Tuesday, there was a rainbow over the Interstate Bridge right before I saw her. And I said, just like the colors of the rainbow or the Fiesta color. So there's so much of this play that is so, you know, so it's a holiday play and not a holiday play.
Well, it has that spirit, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does.
And
it
every
does.
Time somebody buys one of those pieces of Fiesta ware, they will also remember her name.
Yeah, she
so
said,
I just
please
think that's
let them find a home.
Aww.
And we are.
Well, Bob Hicks, let's talk about the play a little bit. Thank you for that story. Bob Hicks, in his review for Oregon Arts Watch, says that though the American Fiesta isn't a Christmas show, it's probably got the brightest holiday wrapping in town. And so that's a really great tribute and high praise from him. I just wanted to ask you, how has been the response to the theme of marriage equality? I mean, why did you think that would be also a good theme for the holidays?
Well, in 2014, we're going to face a ballot measure. Jeff, my partner, and I got married in 2004, and then we got it annulled. And, you know, I love when I get the $60 check back and says, here you are, your marriage is annulled. And I thought, okay, so this will be a neck. We can get married in Oregon. We will get married in Oregon. We're not going to go anyplace else. And I want to stand up and tell people that we as individuals, like Joan said the day she died, she said, we all have to stand up and believe what we believe. And I think marriage equality is an issue that we have to face. And Oregon's the only state on the West Coast that doesn't face it. And we need to face it.
And so. I want to say that you didn't get annulled by choice.
No, we didn't get annulled. Right. No.
Yeah.
I love
you
that
were annulled by.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that we're in the New York Times and we were in, you know, we were the face of the gay couples in Oregon. And at the same time, we get this check and I go, well, you know, we've got to fight the fight again.
Well, Triangle Productions presents American Fiesta by Stephen Tomlinson, and it's performed by Gary Wayne Cash. And the show centerpiece is the festive and colorful collection of Fiesta ware that was donated by Joan Hayward's estate. And Joan Hayward, the collection has, less than 235 pieces now. It's a vintage Fiesta ware, and it's sold during the run of the show to raise funds for Triangle Productions. American Fiesta performs through December 22nd, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. with Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. All shows are at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza. That's located at 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. For more info, visit tripro.org for Triangle Productions. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts with Don Horn of Triangle Productions and Luann Moldovan and Rusty Tennant of Artist Repertory Theater. So we've talked a little bit about the holiday shows and that working during the holidays for artists can be quite festive as well. And do you find that it gets you into the, I mean, whenever I've done a holiday show as an actor, it just gets me into the spirit a little bit more.
Definitely.
You know, to be able to work on the on some kind of creative art during the holidays. Do you find that as well,
Oh,
Luann?
Definitely. It helped kind of initiate the whole sense of the holidays being upon us for me in a positive way, which was really refreshing rather than the pressure of, my God, like you were saying, by having to buy gifts and all of that.
Yeah, now you have an excuse.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sorry, I'm too busy.
But yeah. I find the audiences that come to the theater want to be there, and that's their gift. We're giving them a gift also by doing theater. They actually thank you for doing this type of show during this time of the year. Yeah. That's great.
And so they like to linger and talk to you a little bit more about that. So in the time remaining, what else is in store for you? Don, you want to talk about the Wendy's play that's coming up after this?
We're continuing our 24th season with Wendy Westerwelle doing a Medicarefully Fabulous about her being 66 years old, and she does not regret that now because she has Medicare. Oh, then we're going to do next fall, which was a Broadway hit, and then the last show will be Jim Pepper about the Jim Pepper project about Jim Pepper. So
well, we'll keep talking about some of those shows because it's actually an unusual season for you in many respects too.
Yes, it's
all
over
the place.
It's
more serious themes.
Hush,
I like it though, but that's good.
Yes,
that's
wait good. Till next year.
Wait till next year. Well, you know, we have to have balance there. And how about you, Luann? What's going on for you after this?
Creatively, I'm not sure. I'm going to be working on my writing some more, some plays and film scripts. So
good, yeah. good. I'm with you there. And Rusty, what's going on with you?
Next project for me is directing Spring Awakening out at Clark College. And then immediately following that, I go into rehearsal for Buried Child with Profile Theater. And then immediately following that is the Outright Festival. I'm artistic director of Fuse Theater Ensemble as well. And we put on a celebration of LGBTQ work during Gay Pride, around the season of Gay Pride, and between here and other places. And it's just a citywide collection of readings, stage readings, concert reads, some actual full-fledged performances, just recognizing the fact that the LGBTQ community has, you know, for many years supported theater and really been a major part of, you know, what has created theater, not only within the participants, you know, the people putting on the theater, but the audiences as well. So just honoring that for a period of time with the work that gets done in this city.
Well, do you want to give more info about how to find out more about
theater? Yeah, absolutely. Fuse Theater, fusepdx.org is our website, and the Outright Festival will be coming out with its own website here within the next couple of months.
And when is that?
The Outright Festival is going to be right around Gay Pride. I'm holding off on, right now, reserving. I'm holding off on saying exactly what dates.
And that's usually in June, though.
Yeah, because it's such a citywide event right now. It's going to be determined by people's actual runs of their own shows. So I don't want to be specific right now as to say exactly what the
dates
are.
And you organize all of that. Good for you.
Well, you know, I have definitely my friends who like to help out. And Fuse is, you know, is a really great ensemble and support staff. We have some really great people. Kate Mira, Sarah Faye Goldman, Nicholas Hoback, Athena McElrath, and those guys have really put in a ton of work on it as well. So it isn't just me, but it is definitely a brainchild that I've been excited about doing for years, and I'm really proud and honored to have the opportunity on PDX to kind of bring this to fruition. And last year we had a number of really great readings that have since gone on to be published, and have had successful runs in various different theaters, and we're trying to get some of the bigger ones in that at least that I know about. And if anybody out there has any suggestions for me, you can email them to me at rusty.fuse@gmail.com. I would love your LGBTQ scripts.
All right, so you heard it here first, folks. So Rusty Tennant and Luann Moldovan of Artist Repertory Theater's Xmas Unplugged, thanks for coming today.
Thanks.
And Don Horn, Triangle Productions, American Fiesta. It's always a pleasure to
Thank
talk
you
to you as
back.
Well. You know, you're a returnee, so we're
I'm
glad to have you
back.
Here. he always comes
always
back. I don't know what to do.
It's up the street, so
he
you
just
know,
waits
down.
For me every week. I don't know. You can find out more about all these shows and get photos and links and a podcast of the interview at stageandstudio.org. The holidays are a time of festivities and often includes dancing. So I'm going into the audio vault right now. To 1988, that was an audio vault opening, if you didn't know that. And I want to play you this short Vox Pop piece with people sharing their memories about the first time they danced.
The first time I remember dancing, oh my God.
Probably dancing with another girl because there weren't enough boys to go around. Having to be the boy.
I went every other Saturday to cotillion class, and we'd sit on opposite ends of the room and walk over and ask the girls to dance and bow and had to wear ties. And we learned the foxtrot and the tango, and I always won those contests.
I just felt so out of place. It just seemed like all the other little girls danced better than I did. And one in particular was slender and lovely and had this cute little pink tutu, and I just had a seersucker jumpsuit.
I was sitting at the dinner table when I was like 3, and my parents were like sitting and staring at me, and I was bobbing my head back and forth, and I asked them if that was considered dancing, if I was dancing yet.
And I remember my first recital is the first time I remember dancing. We had yellow tutus and little rosebud rings in our hair, which I thought were the hottest thing that ever happened. I'm trying to think of the song that we sang.
For I'm too young to be in toe shoes, for now my ballet shoes must do.
The early 60s, I was about 5 years old. I used to watch that show Where the Action Is, you know. And the dance craze back then was the Jerk, and I used to imitate him.
It was in Nebraska. It was a summer rain. The streets were swamped with water, and we danced in the rain. And it was so great. I remember I had every part of my clothes were wet, and we just had so much fun playing back and forth, sort of combination square dance and bacchanalia, I think, at the time. And then the hail started. That was great. You know, to sit on the porch and watch.
The first time I remember dancing was in 7th grade, when a 9th grade girl came up, put her scarf around me, and started doing a belly dance. I was intimidated.
I didn't have a date, just a bunch of us girls went, and I was all dressed up in my Sunday dress, in my Sunday shoes, feeling enormous, as only a 7th grader can feel enormous, and not a single solitary boy asked me to dance. But my best friend asked me to dance, and she had these giant, giant breasts. And we tried to dance, she led, without touching each other. There must have been half the Atlantic Ocean between us in terms of space.
There'd be one line of girls and then one line of guys. You know, I thought it was kind of stupid.
I remember like seeing friends dancing with guys and going, oh, when's it gonna be my turn?
Do you remember your first slow dance?
I remember
it was like, you know, sort of a mutual hug. You know?
Yeah, that's what everybody was doing then.
Oh, it was like playing a wrap around. Everybody had their arms around each other. It was like, don't look at anybody else and don't anybody look at me. And I knew my face was beet red because it felt like it was 110 degrees.
I'm too young to be in toe shoes. For now, my ballet shoes must do.
And that was a radio piece I produced in 1988 called First Dance. You can hear more at my archive at soundcloud.com/DMayRoberts. That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org. And you can download shows at iTunes. And don't forget to like us on the facebook.com/stage_n_studio or stage_n_studio to tweet me. Till next time, I'm DMay Roberts.